Northern Ireland votes for seismic shift, but will it lead to another storm and stalemate? Sinn Féin soar, overtaking the DUP for the first time in the history of this state. SDLP flounders, the UUP is under pressure, while the Alliance Party surges ahead. Good afternoon and welcome to Saturday with Katie Hannan. Coming to you live today from the Titanic Centre in Belfast, where counting in the Northern Ireland Assembly election is still underway. My panel this lunchtime, Conall McDevitt, former SDLP MLA and now CEO of Hume Brophy, Amanda Ferguson, journalist and political commentator, and down the line we are joined also by writer and Derry-based journalist Susan McKay. We'll be bringing you the latest from those constituencies that are still counting, but at this point I can tell you that 51 of the 90 seats have been filled. And the story that became clear early on yesterday continues to unfold, with Sinn Féin holding on to seats and picking up seats, mainly at the expense of the SDLP. So in normal circumstances, we'll be talking now about Michelle O'Neill becoming First Minister. But it's not that straightforward. Michelle O'Neill can't become First Minister unless Geoffrey Donaldson agrees to be the Deputy First Minister, and it's not at all clear today if that is on the cards. I'm joined now by former DUP First Minister Paul Given. Paul, congratulations first on your own re-election in Lagan Valley. The DUP was insisting coming into this election that the Northern Ireland Protocol issue would have to be addressed before you would consider re-entering the Assembly and establishing an executive. Is that still the DUP position this afternoon?
Well, the Belfast Agreement is predicated upon a power-sharing arrangement here in Northern Ireland for the institutions to work, and that requires both unionists and nationalists to consent to that. And those arrangements have been undermined as a result of the changes that came about through the Northern Ireland Protocol. And we've been clear that with New Decade, New Approach, commitments were made by the United Kingdom government that our place within the UK would have unfettered access, that our place within that internal market would be respected, and it isn't. And that was done without the consent of any unionist. So I want to see Stormont up and running. I want there to be a fully functioning executive. I will respect the democratic outcome of this election, but we need to make sure that the foundations upon which it is built upon are durable. And if we are to be true to the Belfast Agreement, that requires both unionists and nationalists. So Sinn Féin can't get an executive unless unionism gives its consent to that. And similarly, when Sinn Féin kept the government down for 3 years, unionists weren't able to have an executive until Sinn Féin were able to buy into the political process. And that's how we make progress, where we get agreements, we get consensus, and we make progress. And that's what I want to see.
Geoffrey Donaldson arrived here in the last hour, and he was asked very directly by Amanda Ferguson, who's here beside me now, will we have a government in 2022? And his answer was, let's cross all those bridges when we come to them. That sounds ominous to the ears of people who were hoping to get these institutions back up and running.
Well, I don't think we can afford to have a long period of time where we don't have these institutions up and running, because public confidence will drain away from these institutions. So I do want to see them up and running. I want that to happen as soon as possible. But we do know the issues that is preventing that from happening. And so let's get the progress that's needed around resolving the issues to do with the Irish Sea border, and let's get an executive up and running.
So is this on Boris? Is this a Boris Johnson problem now that needs to be solved?
Boris Johnson is absolutely partly to blame for this, and that's one of the reasons why I'm a committed devolutionist, because I actually don't want to be run from London. I don't think direct rule is good for Northern Ireland. I don't think it's good for unionism. I think we're better to have our voices within a local devolved assembly. So I want Stormont to be up and running, but that requires a partnership to be based between nationalism and unionism. Both need to consent to that. No one community can dictate to the other. And we have made clear the basis on which this executive can be formed is whenever the Belfast Agreement is properly respected and unionism and nationalism can both give its consent to these arrangements.
Now, there will be many out there who will look at this today and hear what you're saying and listen to what Geoffrey Donaldson is saying and say, you just do not want to go into government when Michelle O'Neill has the upper hand, when Michelle O'Neill is the First Minister.
No, because I know exactly how the executive operates. The executive office is co-equal. Legally, it is equal. And so I accept, in terms of the election results that have taken place, Sinn Féin are the largest party here in Northern Ireland. I'm disappointed with that outcome as a pro-union party. I would much rather that the pro-union majority that has came through in the number of votes cast is reflected in terms of what the largest political party is, but that hasn't happened. But I believe that we can again continue in this election cycle. There's always tomorrow to build upon the foundations that we have. We're getting good results across Northern Ireland. I would like it to be better, but it's not what some predicted it would be in terms of the DUP's position, and we can go forward from here.
So when the Taoiseach says, as he said in the last couple of weeks, that if the DUP do not go back into the Assembly, that that would be undemocratic, that that would not be respecting democracy.
Well, the Taoiseach, with the greatest respects, went into a coalition arrangement in the Republic of Ireland when he could agree a programme for government and had a basis on which that happened. So I don't think it's for the Taoiseach to be dictating what happens here in Northern Ireland, nor should London be dictating what happens. If we're to make Northern Ireland work, it's about building relationships across the political parties where unionism, nationalism and now a very significant alliance vote that has taken place, and they have definitely consolidated that vote across those that would define themselves in a progressive manner, with the Green Party having lost their two seats and the Ulster Unionist Party and the SDLP losing votes to the Alliance Party as well. So there are three main parties now in Northern Ireland, and if we're to make the progress that I want to see, it's going to require us working together.
Okay. Paul Given, many thanks for joining us with that today. And I'll go straight to you, Susan McKay. What do you make of that?
I think it's interesting to hear Paul Given talking about not wanting direct rule and it not being good for unionism, because the problem with the current situation that the DUP finds itself in is that they are going to be left behind if they don't move forward. It's fine for Geoffrey Donaldson to talk about crossing bridges when he comes to them, but he has come to them and he's refusing to cross them. And what it is no surprise that we already have seen the Sinn Féin president, Mary Lou McDonald, talking in terms of, look, we're just going to have to go for a border poll and that there can be one in 5 years, because if unionism continues to dither about like this and not accept the democratic vote that has come about through this election, then people just aren't going to wait for it. They're just going to say, well, look, Northern Ireland can't work. The DUP actually isn't into power sharing, and we're just going to have to go on without them. And, you know, they've rejected the Good Friday Agreement. Geoffrey Donaldson and his party aligned themselves with anti-Good Friday Agreement elements in unionism during the campaign for this election, and it has backfired for them, because while the TUV has done relatively well, the DUP has suffered, and we've seen the swing to both Sinn Féin and to Alliance. So the choices aren't as great as Paul Given might like to think they are at this stage for his party.
Indeed. Conor McDevitt, Paul Given insisting there, they really want to go back in, he's a devolutionist, this is what the DUP are about. Do you accept their bona fides on this?
Oh, absolutely, I accept that Paul Given is a devolutionist, he's to work with him. I can vouch for that. I think the issue here is that the DUP are slightly painted in a corner, as Suzanne said. The corner they painted in themselves in is one that they can't fix, that the British government need to fix, because it's about the Northern Ireland Protocol and its implementation. And I think the question really now is, how quickly can a fudge be found, a very minor fudge, around the Northern Ireland Protocol?
Do you think it will only take a minor fudge?
I would say that there's two things happening today that will help the DUP, and these are fortuitous, serendipitous things. One, it looks like Jim Allister's TUV will underperform. In other words, they'll get a decent vote, but they won't
He trebled his vote.
Yes, but they'll only get one seat out of it. That's what it looks like is going to happen. And as a result, that pressure is off the DUP once those votes are converted into seats. The second bit of pressure that's going to come on is popular. Paul alluded to it. The people in Northern Ireland want their assembly back. We are looking down the barrel of a gun of a crisis in energy, in poverty, across the board. And that's going to affect people from all communities. So I suspect there will be a significant body of opinion, if not the majority opinion, inside the DUP to try and get this fixed as soon as possible.
Amanda, we were talking to Alex Kane a bit about this last night. The psychological blow to unionism and unionists to wake up today to Sinn Féin being the largest party in Northern Ireland?
Well, Sinn Féin and the DUP have been sharing power for the last 15 years and only one seat separated them last time, so they are at the top of government, and really the title should be joint First Minister. One doesn't exist without the other, but it is that psychological impact of the first time within 101 years that an Irish Republican who wants to see reunification is holding that top position, and there's a lot of international interest in it. I think when I listened to Paul Given talking there, he wanted to stay on in the post of First Minister. He wants to be back in government. And I think the problem for the DUP is that they're conflating two issues. The Brexit protocol is something that will be resolved, finessed, worked through by the UK government and by the EU. It's not something that the DUP is in a position to fix. And they're going to come under a huge amount of pressure from the public with regard to the cost of living crisis, because every single party in their manifesto pledged, you know, £200, £230, £250 to help people with those energy and fuel bills that are really, you know, forcing lots of families, the working poor, to really struggle out there. So they're going to come under pressure. The only problem we have is that after the last collapse we had between 2017 and 2020, when government was finally restored, that breathing space of 6 months was put in place so that you wouldn't have to call another election for a period of 6 months. So they do have a bit of time to play with, but I'm not sure that the public appetite is there, particularly because they're not going back into this assembly term in the strongest position. And if the DUP want to wield power in anywhere, this is the only place that they can do it.
Susan, talk to me a little about the other elements of unionism. Conal touched on it there in relation to the TUV. A very good result in one way, but not it hasn't been translated into a single extra seat.
It hasn't been translated into extra seats, but I wouldn't agree with Conal on the question of its pressure. I think Jim Allister will continue to put substantial pressure on Geoffrey Donaldson, and the fact that he has received a substantial increase in his first preference votes will be very menacing to the DUP, because those are definitely DUP votes. Nobody else is interested in the TUV. Nobody else has deferred to them. Nobody else has gone on platforms with them in the way that Geoffrey Donaldson did. So I think that they will continue to be jibed at by Jim Allister in a way that is profoundly difficult for the DUP, because it's a pattern of behaviour that was started by the DUP founder, Ian Paisley Sr. So I think as far as we can see, that what has happened in a way, there's been a major simplification of the political picture in the North, because we've now got the Sinn Féin representing nationalism and republicanism, we've got the DUP representing unionism, and we've got Alliance representing the other parties. The Ulster Unionist Party has done disastrously badly, and it's clear that any kind of liberal vote within unionism has migrated to Alliance. It hasn't placed its faith in Doug Beattie's party.
Would you agree on that one? We had Alex Kane here last night saying he can see no future at all now for the Ulster Unionists.
No, it would appear not. I mean, I think that the Ulster Unionist Party has long been eclipsed by the DUP, but there were people who felt that if it started to offer a more progressive, attractive version of unionism, that it could draw back some of the voters that it had lost, who had become disillusioned with the sort of drift towards extreme fundamentalism again within the DUP. But that hasn't happened. Those people have put their faith in Naomi Long, who is not a unionist but has many unionists within her party.
You were saying there, Amanda, that the TUV might strike again at local elections.
Yes, well, I think because Jim hasn't reached that tipping point to convert the votes that they've received into extra seats for his party, he'll be looking forward to the council election. The problem for Jim is that he's a one-man party and that he can't attract the calibre of candidates of equal intellect to himself to stand for the TUV. Where I sort of think that the Ulster Unionist issue comes into play is that liberal-minded unionists are more likely to vote first preference for the Ulster Unionist Party, and you know, this talk of a one or a single unionist party just isn't going to chime, because there are people that are committed to Ulster Unionist Party values who wouldn't countenance voting for voting for DUP or voting for TUV as their first preferences. And if there's no home for them, then they will all move to Alliance. But something that happens with the Alliance Party is that people characterise it, and they kind of have an interpretation of it that's like a dated sort of 80s party's analysis that it's a soft unionist party. It isn't. There are people that vote for Alliance that are Republicans. There are some that are unionists. There are some that are undecided, don't cares, persuadables on the constitutional question. So while we're moving into this three-block system, it's that middle ground that is going to be the all-important group that decides probably the border poll in the future. So at the moment, unionism is alienating that group in the way that its political representatives are speaking about and to unionist reps and voters.
And I think people, some of the analysis over the last 24 hours about Sinn Féin's, you know, fantastic, brilliant performance from their point of view, was that they played a very cool game in that they were being prodded and poked to talk about the border poll and go down that road, but they held back. But as soon as the polls closed, we were hearing about the border poll all over again. Is this going to spook unionists at a time when we're trying to get everything up and running?
Well, I think there's two dimensions to that. The first is it's a dangerous game for the Sinn Féin party to play because they don't have a mandate for the border poll. The nationalist vote is actually going down. In fact, it's been going down for 25 years. The vote, the support for unionism and the support for nationalism has nothing but declined since the Good Friday Agreement. And so it's very difficult to argue that there is a momentum for constitutional change when, yeah, you're having great elections and, you know, you're beating the SDLP and they deserve full credit for that.
But it's a zero-sum game.
But it's an entire zero-sum game. And as Amanda says, the persuadables now are non-designating people. And you do not convince a bunch of persuadables by moving into a more definite, kind of clearly demarcated form of nationalism. And that's Sinn Féin's problem. They're very strong at being their version of nationalism, but their version of nationalism is not attractive outside of the core vote.
Before we leave the unionist, you know, possible next steps here, Susan, could you crystal ball for me? Where will we be? What will we be talking about next week? And will we be talking about exactly the same thing in 6 months' time? And will we be looking at another election?
Well, it's certainly apparent that the DUP doesn't intend to go into government at the moment. I think that Connell's description of Sinn Féin's position is slightly inaccurate. I think that they are now in a position to campaign for a border poll. I mean, a lot of the polls that have been taken are based on, do people want a united Ireland now? Of course people want to think and people want to have proposals as to how that might look. So things are in a process of change. I think it's a very interesting time for the North and quite an exciting time. And I think that for once it looks as if change is beginning to be possible in whatever direction that goes. And I think that the refusal of the DUP to go into government is just going to play into the hands of Sinn Féin. And I think that sensible people within the DUP will see that. But that leaves them then grasping for the help of Boris Johnson. And he was so helpful that he allowed the Secretary of State, Brandon Lewis, to come out the day before the election and say, no, we're not actually going to help you on the protocol. So the DUP is left in a...
He's going to be otherwise occupied as well in the next
while. I think he has bigger fish to fry.
Okay, we'll leave that one there. I need to take a break, but we'll be talking to Minister Charlie McConnellogue after these.
Saturday with Katie Hannan on RTE Radio 1.
And welcome back to the Titanic Centre here in Belfast. Now, the seismic result of this election does, of course, have the potential to have major repercussions on the political landscape on both sides of the border. Agriculture Minister Charlie McConnellogue, Fianna Fáil TD for Donegal. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Katie.
Can I just, first of all, get your first reaction, your general reaction to this result, this outcome?
Well, I think, first of all, just to wish those candidates who are elected well and commiserate those that have been elected. And I think, obviously, the important thing coming out of this will be that we do see an executive re-established and those that are elected today and yesterday working actually for the public and having a functioning government. I think we did see some of the moderate parties getting squeezed in this election, particularly the way it played out. With regard to the stance taken by the DUP, I think that benefited and helped the Sinn Féin vote as well, and also saw some erosion of the more moderate parties, the SDLP, for example, and the UUP. But that was the way the campaign went. But I think the lure and the prospect of Nationalist First Minister, and indeed the approach taken by the DUP to that, I think was a factor as well.
Did Conor Meath really make a strategic error on that front? They dismissed that as an issue in the last couple of weeks of the election, and it turned out to be, apparently, a very big issue.
Well, I think it's clear it was an issue, but I mean, the SDLP, I think, fought a very strong campaign, and certainly Colm Eastwood, in terms of the two leadership debates that would have happened, performed very well and would have been seen to be the strongest performing leader in that. But I think there was no doubt that that dynamic, and we've seen that in Stormont elections over the last number, that there does be that partisanship, and that it does aid and assist the largest parties in both the unionist side and the nationalist side. And we've seen the DUP and Sinn Féin benefit from that. And indeed, I think in terms of the consolidation of DUP seats that would have seemed to be, that would have been seen to be under pressure during the campaign, I think that dynamic would have assisted them in this instance as well. But nonetheless, that is the reality of the structure under the Good Friday Agreement and the power sharing arrangements. And the key thing and the key objective behind that is actually that we have an executive and a government that works. And I think there's no doubt that the key issues in the campaign were issues such as cost of living, housing, healthcare access, and the only way that those can be dealt with is actually by having a functioning government. And indeed, as a Donegal TD and somebody who lives only a short distance from the border myself, it's really important to the northwest of the country, to the northern half of the island as well, that we have a functioning executive that actually can work on behalf of the public, and indeed deal in relation to shared services and work together. So last time around, Katie, and your panel mentioned it earlier on, it took almost 3 years to establish an executive after the March 2017 executive elections, and it's really crucial that we actually see an executive come together now soon, and a similar situation on a rise again.
Minister, we understand that the Taoiseach and Geoffrey Donaldson are close, that they do speak regularly enough. Do you know, have they spoken since his own election yesterday?
I don't know, but I've no doubt that they will do, and I've no doubt that both the Taoiseach and the Minister for Foreign Affairs, Simon Coveney, will do all they can in terms of working to assist in any way we can as well. Obviously, being a co-guarantor of the Good Friday Agreement, there is a role there in terms of being supportive of any efforts, and obviously also the issue around the protocol. Is something we'll continue to work with the British government on and the European Union on. But I think that is an issue which the executive can't and isn't in a position to deal with directly. And really what we need to see an executive for is to deal with the really important issues for the people right across Northern Ireland at the moment. That's why it's important everybody works together to follow through in the mandate they've been given yesterday and today and actually put a functioning government in place.
Do you have any sympathy for the DUP position in this?
Well, it's obviously a real challenge. I mean, the Brexit undertaking in the first instance was something that really threatened and was really challenging for Northern Ireland. That was something that we would have pointed out as a government right throughout that, and as various parties that. The coming together and the removal of those borders and those barriers that would have been I was very familiar with growing up, and that all of us experienced the fact that we were all within the European Union, and the establishment of the common market enabled those to be removed. And obviously the decision by Britain and the UK then to leave the European Union created a real challenge, and that's why the protocol is in place to try and ensure that the impact of that is minimised. But I do understand it's a challenge for unionists, but that's why we're working very closely with the British government and very understanding of that, indeed trying to ensure that there's as strong and effective an accommodation as possible coming from that.
The Taoiseach said that it would be undemocratic if Geoffrey Donaldson did not take his MLAs back into the Assembly.
I think that's absolutely right. I think everyone across Northern Ireland wants to see an executive now formed. And, you know, people have been given the mandate to go into Stormont and indeed to actually form a government. And I think the onus is on all parties now to work together. And I know they'll be coming together next week. But it's important that that's done with a view to actually putting a functioning government in place.
Does this bring the prospect of a border poll much more sharply into focus now?
I don't think it was a big issue during the election. I think that the people of Northern Ireland were very much focused on the real issues, the real day-to-day live issues, and that's what they were wanted to elect a government for. From a government point of view, and the Taoiseach has been very forthright in terms of putting in place the shared island approach, which I think is the way forward for us, and I think is something that has very strong support both in Northern Ireland and in the Republic. But I think first and foremost, what the people of Northern Ireland want to see is actually a government in place which will understand the challenges they have, ensure that health issues, ensure that housing issues, ensure that cost of living issues are addressed.
Finally, Minister, can I ask Ciara put to you, Sinn Féin has proven themselves to be yet again a great vote-getting machine, something that Fianna Fáil would have been in the driving seat of in the past. Biggest party in the north now, they've their wind the wind at their backs. You must be nervous.
No, listen, parties' votes go up and parties' votes go down at election time. Just a couple of years ago, Sinn Féin had a much poorer day in terms of the Westminster elections. On this occasion, their vote has gone up by 1.1%. They've held what they had, and they added 1% to that, and the fracturing of the unionist vote has led to them being very clearly now in line to be the largest party. So, that's a good performance for them in this instance, but I do think it was aided as well by that dynamic in relation to the way that played out, particularly between the DUP and Sinn Féin. But every election is different. Okay. In terms of the work we're doing in government, the work I'm doing in government as a border minister as well, Katie, we're very focused on delivering for the public, delivering for the North West region. Okay. And each election will be different, and certainly with the time the next general election comes, we'll be going forward on our track record in that regard. And as we all know, it's very hard to predict an election 1 week out, don't talk about a year or two out. So everybody just needs to focus on doing their work. And indeed, I hope that that's what we see happening in Northern Ireland now over the next few weeks.
Okay. Minister Charlie McConnell-Logue, many thanks for joining us this afternoon. Now, can we pause now, bring ourselves back to the panel here and talk about the other parties that did not have a good day yesterday. Connell, your old alma mater, if I can put it that way. It was a devastating result for the SDLP.
It's a very, very, very bad day for the SDLP. It's a tragic day. Some of the best assembly members the SDLP has ever produced are losing their seats.
And so many women.
And a lot of women. And it's going to affect the dynamics and the culture of the next assembly, which hopefully will get back to work. They'll have to sit down and they'll have to try and understand what has happened, because they've been sliced, as far as I can see, marginally by Sinn Féin, but mainly by the middle ground, this emerging other category. And so they're going to have to reframe a variation of nationalism that's capable of growing support for people of an Irish identity politically in the north of Ireland, rather than losing it, which is what's happening at the moment.
Matthew O'Toole was saying today there would be another day, another hour for social democratic politics. But could he be wrong about that? Could we be, as we said about the Ulster Unionist Party, does the SDLP really have a future now?
No, it absolutely has a future. There is a need for a party in Northern Ireland that is both social democratic and capable of presenting a post-nationalist Ireland, capable of articulating a vision for a new Ireland that doesn't rely on border polls, but that's built on a successful Northern Ireland where power sharing and equality happens. There isn't too many parties out there who can vie for that position. The SDLP is it. But to get there, it has to have the courage now to start a process of reinvention. And that has to start soon.
The cheering. I'm not sure who's getting elected there. I might be able to bring you that in a moment. But I'll bring you in here, Amanda. The SDLP, did they make strategic errors during that campaign?
The problem for the SDLP is not that it doesn't have good people. It has lots of really articulate candidates, lots of impressive people, lots of great media performers. The problem for the SDLP is that it's a six-county party.
And can I just put you, because it was said by Charlie McConnell-Logue there, we've said it here earlier in the programme, that the bread and butter issues, what mattered to people, they were trying to sell themselves on those issues. But where it worked for the Alliance, it didn't work for them.
Yes, I think because nationalism has moved on, it's moved forward, it's seeing the idea that it's possible for an Irish Nationalist Republican Party to be the largest party at Stormont. You know, I spoke to a voter who's from a Republican family, but he'd never voted in his life before, and he was aged in about his 30s, and he said he was coming out to vote for Sinn Féin because he felt now was the time that it might actually make a difference, that the tipping point had been breached over. I think whenever you look at the election campaign, the DUP spoke more about the border poll than any other party. So what Sinn Féin did was send out the candidates and the people that would appeal more to the middle ground, Mary Lou McDonald, John Finucane, who I would imagine will probably be a future leader of Sinn Féin, and then towards the end they brought Michelle out, Michelle O'Neill, to have a more human approach and you know, very much sort of in preparation for being a leader. And I think that whenever people open the door to canvassers and someone from Sinn Féin is on the other side, they know that it's a Republican on the other side of the door, so they don't have to keep talking about border poll. What they need to do is, if they want to be in government on both sides of the border in Ireland, then they, by their actions, they'll progress towards the border poll. Nobody's ready for it yet. We know that support for it is around 35-40%, but advocates for it would indicate that that would be a good starting point before any official campaigning would begin. And Sinn Féin repeatedly talk about a decade of opportunity, so I'd imagine that we'll see it in the next 5 to 10 years.
Right, and just to let you know, that cheering was because the Strangford count has wrapped up. Those 5 seats have been filled, and we will, as I say, be doing a wraparound of the a whip around to the constituencies that are still counting shortly, and bring you those details. Susan, can I go to you about the other big story, and big story, obviously, from this election, and that is the surge for the Alliance.
A footnote there to what was being said about the SDLP. I think that Amanda's right there. It is very tragic, really, to see the fact that the Ulster Unionist Party and the SDLP, which originally brought us the Good Friday Agreement and did all the heavy lifting to bring it, have been eclipsed now. And I do think that's sad. But I, you know, if you look at the way that the SDLP kind of has tried out both Fianna Fáil, Labour, and Fine Gael, and the Republican has found that it doesn't really fit with any of them. But, sorry, what was the question that you actually asked me there, Katie?
The
Alliance story is extraordinary, and I think I think that it's only the beginning of a really big change, because Alliance has been, Naomi Long has been saying for a long time now that it's intolerable that no matter how well her party did, and indeed any other party did, they couldn't take the First or Deputy First Ministries, because the Good Friday Agreement envisaged a kind of divvying up between the two binary parties, the biggest Republican or the biggest Nationalist Party and the biggest Unionist Party. And that means that, you know, anybody who votes Alliance is currently actually regarded as a second class citizen, and clearly she's not going to be willing to tolerate that. So I think that she's going to be fairly forceful in trying to ensure that the rules are changed to reflect the new reality. But I think that, you know, you're already hearing both Sinn Féin and the DUP now referring respectfully to the fact that there is the Alliance as the third party. You know, you're going to see them much more recognising that it isn't all about the binary anymore. And I think that, you know, it's kind of sad that in many ways Alliance, you know, ended up pushing out very interesting smaller parties like the Greens. But at the same time, I think that they do represent similar values in many ways. And crucially, they're attracting young, progressive people who are no longer interested in the old ideas of what's important to Northern Ireland. So I think that you're seeing a lot of very strong candidates coming in. You're seeing people coming from very diverse backgrounds as Alliance candidates who've been successful. And that's just going to make for a much more healthy political environment at Stormont, and it's going to up the game for both the DUP and Sinn Féin in terms of appealing to people who have gone to Alliance, because, you know, certainly for Sinn Féin, when it comes to a border poll, they've got to get the support of people who currently don't vote or who do vote Alliance.
Yeah, and Amanda Ferguson, they're getting to the critical mass point now, where, as you say, exactly as Susan was saying there, it's unsustainable that we maintain this designation of
nationalist or unionist.
Well, whenever the 1998 Good Friday Agreement was put together, it was kind of envisaged that it would be nationalist and unionist, and that would be where the balance would be. It's actually easier for Alliance to hold the First Minister role than it is for them to hold Deputy First Minister, because First Minister is the party that has the largest number of seats, and then the Deputy comes from the second biggest designation, and because Other is such a small designation, it wouldn't be in the position to do that. So theoretically, Alliance could have come second and still not been able to nominate for a First Minister. So they will push for reform of that. I think that what you're saying is Alliance is capable of taking votes off everyone, and I think that they've been underestimated. They've been the analysis of them has been poor for a number of years, and they were completely underestimated going into this election. You almost had to fight to include them in the conversation, because the obsession with this part of the world tends to be around republicanism and unionism.
Okay, I'm told, I'm going to come back to you, Conal, shortly, but I'm told that John Finucane, the Sinn Féin Director of Elections, is standing by. Have I got you, John?
Yes, hello, good afternoon.
John, many thanks for joining us this afternoon, and congratulations on what, by any standards, is a very, very good day for Sinn Féin.
Yeah, it's, you know, the results are still coming in painfully slow in some areas, but I think that the picture that's emerging is that I think people have responded very well to our campaign, our message. We were very clear. We were focused on, I think, the main issues that we were getting on the doors. And in my position of Director of Elections, I was, you know, outside of my own constituency, I was in every constituency, and the two big things that people wanted delivery on was, one, a functioning executive, and two, to deal with cost of living, to deal
with our
health
service.
Are
they going to get number one? Sorry, John Finucane. Are they going to get number one, do you think?
Well, I don't see any reason that is credible as to why they shouldn't. And I note that as soon as the results started to trickle through, we started to hear from those who, to me, aren't accepting the democratic result, aren't accepting the electorate's voice, the reasons why they shouldn't go back to work. And the problem in that is that the people here don't have the luxury of weeks and months to have sham fights around a protocol. People are genuinely struggling, really, really struggling with cost of living, and the numbers of people who are struggling is getting bigger and bigger. Stormont has over 330 million that's sitting there, which can't be allocated, which can't be put out the door and into people's pockets, because there's no executive. We had a brutally tragic situation in Newry, where a woman in her 30s died because an ambulance wasn't able to reach her in time. We have the worst waiting lists on these islands. We need to have an executive. As a party, we need to be working with other parties to actually deliver for people. So the public don't have the luxury, or they don't have the ability to be held to ransom by those parties who won't do the job they were elected to do.
I see Mary Lou MacDonald, your party leader, talking yesterday about Sinn Féin wanting to work with unionists, in partnership with unionists, towards reunification. Given the very delicate situation we now find ourselves in, and as you say there, the absolute requirement to get the executive up and running, is it the time to be pushing that line about reunification?
Well, it's not an either or, I think, and this was something that came up quite a lot during the election. I think that we are more than capable of having an executive dealing with our health service, you know, having a finance minister to allocate money to alleviate the pain that people are feeling around cost of living. But parallel to that, we are living in times where there are multiple indicators that there is change taking place on this island. We have always attempted to be responsible in our approach to that, which is why we have consistently called before the election, during the election, and we will consistently call after the election, that the debate around unity needs to be responsible, but it also needs to be informed, and that's why we have identified the convening of a citizens' assembly as something that needs to take place, because civic society, academic society, and with respect, business society as well, is all looking to the future, and they want to be part of a conversation and be more informed on this.
Conal McDevitt was pointing out the numbers here to us earlier that, okay, a good day for Sinn Féin, but the vote really has only gone up a percentage. It's gone down.
The vote for nationalist parties has gone down consistently every election since 2007.
Ultimately, yeah, the graph is on the going in the other direction. So can you honestly say that there is a mandate for pushing for a border poll at this stage?
Well, again, I think the language is important on this. It's not that this election was fought on a single issue of pushing for a border poll. The Good Friday Agreement identifies how a border poll would come about. What I'm saying is that we have been living in times where there are multiple indicators that we are moving in that direction. I note with interest former leaders of the DUP, who would obviously be diametrically opposed to constitutional change in this island, recognising that there is an inevitability about our border poll coming down the tracks. Now, we can either repeat the mistakes that we watched Britain make around Brexit, or we can provide the structures around this conversation so that when a border poll comes, we are informed and people know what it is they're voting for or what it is they're voting against. Are we ready for that poll tomorrow? Of course not. And we've been consistent on that as well. But I think that it is incumbent, particularly on the Irish government, I think, to provide the structures to prepare for this, because people that I talk to outside of a core Sinn Féin base very much want to be part of that conversation. I think they look across the water to England and see a society that they have very little in common with. And they look at the economic prosperity of the South. They look at the progressive nature of politics in a whole on this island. And I think that it's incumbent upon political leaders to inform the discourse and be responsible on the discourse. So I see no contradiction in saying that we need to have an assembly, we need to have an executive, but whilst also informing the debate around constitutional change.
Are you looking ahead now, John Finucane, to Sinn Féin being in government north and south of the border within a couple of years?
Well, there's no secret in that. It would obviously be the ambition of any political party that they want to have success. We are an all-island party. We have, I think, made it very clear that we want to see change both north and south. We feel that we are best placed to deliver that change. I think February 2020 sent a very strong message in the south, returning us as the most popular party. As far as the results went, I think there's been a significant statement made by the people of the north on Thursday. But I mean, the point of that for me is not, you know, the results themselves aren't the end point. You know, essentially that's the starting point. People are putting their faith in us, and it's incumbent upon us to actually deliver for them, which is why our message before the election was, irrespective of the result, we're ready to go back to work. We are now seeing the picture of the election emerge, and again, the message is the same. We are ready to go back to work in line with other parties and deliver.
Okay, John Finucane, many thanks for giving us your time this afternoon. That's Sinn Féin's John Finucane there. And just to let you know, those cheers in the background you were hearing there, that was the election of Mike Nesbitt for the UUP. And he said a few words there, promising to work with all parties for an urgent programme for government. Can I come back to you, Conal, listening to John Finucane there? Do you get a sense that they can see a way forward here?
Look, you listen to Paul Given at the beginning of the show, you listen to John Finucane. I think everyone who's living in this city or in this region and talks to ordinary people knows that the issues that matter to ordinary people are not a border poll or the Northern Ireland Protocol. They are dealing with the cost of living crisis and everything that goes on around that, right? This is not a very rich place. There are an awful lot of people who are absolutely on the breadline, and it would not take much to turn this place into an absolutely poor place on its knees. It needs a local government to do that, and I think any politician, and they're all good politicians in this region worth their salt, will understand this. So therefore, the number one priority, I think, for everyone is to figure out a way to get this assembly up and running. What does it need? It needs a fudge on the protocol, and that is something that is a matter for the British government and the European Union, and it needs a bit of toning down on the old rhetoric on both sides, frankly. The Good Friday Agreement was not about rhetoric. It was about actually transforming the society. And I think we have the conditions to do so, but they have to want to.
Susan McKay, would you agree with that in relation to the rhetoric?
Patrick, is going to have to be different because, as I said, by now, at this stage, both unionists and Republicans need the votes that are currently going to Alliance. So I think in some ways it is that alone is going to put manners on the bigger parties. They're going to have to win over those votes. So in some ways we could be entering into a phase of quite civil discussion among the political parties. But of course that's all predicated on the notion that the DUP will allow there to be a government in Northern Ireland, and that is by no means clear. They're playing the protocol as a kind of a fig leaf, but increasingly I think even their own voters recognise that just isn't reality. It isn't within the gift of the Northern Ireland executive to do anything about the protocol, and it's quite clear that the British government is indifferent to the plight of unionism.
You would have to worry, wouldn't you, Amanda Ferguson, given the day that the Tories had yesterday, how focused they are going to be on sorting out the issues on this island?
Well, I think the unionists in Northern Ireland need a win on the protocol, and I think if they could limit the checks on the goods that were coming from Britain to Northern Ireland and staying within the North, that could be maybe enough for them to fudge through and talk their way in as if they've got a big concession.
Do you agree with Connell that it's just a small little fudge to spare blushes but would do it?
Well, they need to get real about what's happening, and I think it's going to be a real test for the UK government about how committed they are to the Good Friday Agreement. You know, for an Irish Republican Party to emerge into the largest position, will they feel compelled to sort of throw a bone to unionists and get them some sort of concessions on the protocol? Do they feel that's a necessary move that they're going to have to take? It's an issue that isn't going away, and all of the parties, regardless of their views about Brexit or constitution or whatever, agree that the protocol does need to be finessed. It needs to be more practical, and the business community needs to be allowed to take advantage of dual market access.
Okay, we'll take a break.
Tweet at
Saturday RTE. And you're welcome back to the Titanic Centre here. And let's check in now with some of those constituencies who are still counting votes and filling those final seats. Some of those are happening here in the Titanic Centre. And Aisling Maloney, you've been watching the Belfast constituencies.
Yes, indeed. And we just had some news there. You'll have heard some cheers in the background. We had Orlaithe Flynn from Sinn Féin re-elected for West Belfast, their second seat there, and they should retain all four. It's their stronghold. But yes, let's look at the Alliance gain, which is really coming to pass here in South Belfast. The Alliance held on to their existing seat and got another seat with the current Lord Mayor, Katie Nicholl, who is from Zimbabwe. So that's a first for the Assembly. And she beat the Green Party's Claire Bailey, and her party colleague, Claire Bailey's party colleague in North Down, is also at risk, which would leave no Green MLAs in Stormont. Now, in North Belfast, that Alliance surge is also coming to pass, and it looks like it'll be at the expense of the SDLP leader and sitting Infrastructure Minister Nicola Mallon, but we don't have the full results there yet. Now, verging outside the city, another Alliance gain at the expense of the SDLP again in South Down. But also in this constituency, we have the drama over the DUP seat with Diane Forsyth selected to run there as Jim Wells stepped down. He resigned and he threw his support behind the traditional unionist voice candidate. Now, talking about DUP losses, we're seeing the Strangford constituency that just concluded now. They had three seats there. It was always a struggle for them to retain all three. They lost one, Peter Weir, veteran MLA, and instead we have a new Alliance seat there, a second seat there, and also Mike Meslett from the UUP retained his seat.
Yes, many thanks for that. Okay, Aisling, we'll go over now to Mara Felt and Una Kelly.
Yes, Katie. Well, Upper Ban here, still a bit of a nail-biter for UUP leader Doug Beattie. He's still in a tight race for his seat. It's been really back and forth yesterday evening and this morning, but now it does look like he will retain that because he's benefited from transfers from some other unionist parties, so he'll probably take that fourth seat there. Now, they've already filled it with Sinn Féin's John O'Dowd, Jonathan Buckley from the DUP, Diane Dodds from the DUP, a former MEP and economy minister, was elected here. So the fifth seat in Upper Ban, that's going to be a race now between Sinn Féin's Liam Mackel and Alliance's Owen Tennyson, though it does look more likely at this stage that Alliance will take that there. So no one breathing a sigh of relief yet, but it is going to be so, so tight in that constituency. West Tyrone, we just had that completed, so that's three Sinn Féin MLAs, one SDLP and one DUP, so no change there. Foyle is going to go on for quite some time, only two returned there so far, one Sinn Féin and one SDLP. It's only 3 votes between the 2 remaining SDLP candidates, so it's going to be incredibly tight there. Ryan McCready from the UUP looked like he was a credible challenger to unseat Gary Middleton from the DUP, although Gary Middleton feeling a lot more confident there this morning and this afternoon. And we heard from some SDLP...
I think we might have lost Una's line there. Is Una gone? Okay, look, we'll go to Evelyn O'Rourke then in Jordanstown.
Hi, Katie. Yeah, hi, Katie. I was following 5 constituencies here. 4 of those have been declared. We've just had kind of very dramatic news here in the last few minutes. At North Antrim, you'll hear the cheers there in the background because it's just been confirmed that Patricia O'Lynn for Alliance has won a seat here along with Paul Drew's DUP. Now, she got that seat at the expense of Mervyn Storey, you know, a well-known DUP candidate. She's actually addressing the crowd at the moment. We just heard from Paul Frew, who said that Mervyn Storey will be missed at the Assembly. But I'm hearing phrases like shockwaves here, Katie, because not only has she, as an Alliance candidate, taken that seat, but she's also the first woman MLA for this constituency.
Ever.
Neither Paul Frew nor Pauline O'Lynn made the quota as such, but they were very, very close at the end. But Mervyn Storey, once he was eliminated, it guaranteed them the 4th and 5th seats. So they were very close together. I mean, we heard she'd worked very hard. We'd heard she'd gone outside the Alliance kind of community to try and get 2nd and 3rd and 4th preferences. And obviously transfers worked really well in her favour. The crowd here, her supporters, are over the moon. You can hear it there after this election. So nothing kind of happened much this morning. And then suddenly it's all happened in a rush in the last few minutes here. So that's North Antrim done and dusted now. Then over North Down, we have still 2 to go. But where will they go? The Alliance's Andrew Muir did get that 2nd seat there. We knew he would do well. But the question was, could he get a 2nd Alliance colleague across the line? Are we looking at another Alliance cheer here in this county centre? Because his running mate, Connie Egan, is polling really well here. So at this point, 3rd seat has gone to Stephen Dunn for the DUP. But we have 2 seats left in North Down. Will the 4th seat go to Connie Egan Alliance, giving them 2 seats here? And will the 5th seat go to the incumbent Alan Chambers UUP? We will hopefully find out all that in the next couple of minutes, Katie.
Okay, we'll leave you there for that, Evelyn. Many thanks for that. An exciting moment and a big win there for Alliance taking a very big scalp. Susan McKay, the day just keeps getting better and better for Naomi Long.
It certainly does. I mean, it's by now clear that Alliance, the designation of other is definitely going to have to be changed. Alliance are going to really shake things up in many ways. The vote for Alliance is even a bigger story than the win by Sinn Féin, albeit that is also seismic.
Indeed. I think we leave it there. Do you want one last word, Amanda?
Yeah, just no matter what happens, there's going to be British Unionists, Irish Republicans and others, and people are going to have to share power.
Conor?
I think it's all about making Northern Ireland work. There's no question about that. Whether you want a United Ireland, stay in the United Kingdom, you don't get by to bypass making this place a successful self-governing region. That's the name of the game for anyone's interest in a career in politics long-term around here, in my opinion.
Okay, we'll have to leave it there for today.